Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into the Behind the Bets podcast. We are taping this on December 19th, which is a Wednesday. So the next pod will be a week from now. And so with Phil Steele coming up, also John Murray, we're going to discuss games between now and then in terms of Phil Steele's picks and also potential line moves. Want to get ahead of the action and a lot of good information. I also have an NBA play I posted on ESPN.com chalk page. Now the line has since moved. Vucevic is out for Orlando, but when I submitted my pick overnight and even this morning, it was Spurs pick or minus one, and it is now 3.5 with Vucevic out, but I like the Spurs. Little fun fact that I wrote about for the ESPN chalk page of Spurs have 15 losses, okay? 15 losses. Six times they've got a chance to avenge one of those losses, so they played the opponent again, and all six times they've won. I also just think they're a much better team than people realize. 5-1 homestand. Now this is game one of a road trip. I just think you're going to get maximum effort with this revenge opportunity. And here's a fun stat that people, you know, we all make fun of the long twos with DeRozan, Aldridge. And yes, they rank dead last in the NBA in three-point shot attempts per game, but they're making them count because they're number one in the NBA in three-point shooting percentage. So they're hitting the ones they take, and they also rank sixth in offensive efficiency, so a much better offense than some of the critics that are lazy suggest. So I like the Spurs. Obviously, the line has moved that way with Vucevic out, so 3.5. Just wanted to share. More importantly, go check out our picks every Wednesday on ESPN.com chalk page, although next week we're going to be doing picks on Christmas Day instead, but usually it's every Wednesday with Andre Snellings and Jordan Schultz. But let's get to the college football podcast.
Stop. Hammer time.
It's that time of the podcast. Phil Steele joins us. And Phil, good to have you on here, bud.
Always good talking to you, Douglas.
All right. So the bowl season is ready to really pick up, but I want to talk about a game really down the road between Notre Dame and Clemson on December 29th. I asked you in the last time on the podcast, where do you think that line would go? And you said it would go higher. And sure enough, it has in the last couple days. Clemson now minus 13, 13.5. Now what do you think is going to happen to this line?
I think it eventually will go to the 14 spot, I believe. I think a lot of folks are going to be playing Clemson. And as I mentioned in last week's podcast, when you go from 11.5 to 13, that's pretty easy numbers to cross. Not a lot of games end in 12-point differences or even 13 for that matter. So I think if it goes anywhere, it'll land on 14. Then you'll see some action go on Notre Dame and bring it back down right away. Probably ends up landing about 13.5, I would say.
I know a lot of Vegas sports books are expecting money line plays on both dogs in the national semifinals. And I think you hinted that you kind of side with the Irish right now, right?
Yeah, of the two games, I think Notre Dame has the better chance of winning the game. I think the Irish are a complete team. When you look at them, they've got the run game. They've got Ian Book throwing the football well. They've got a solid run defense, and they also have a solid pass defense, and they're good on special teams. So Notre Dame really is a complete team, and I am leaning with the underdog in that one, but I'm sure we'll discuss that one further as the game draws closer.
Right, so I guess the reason I asked you that is, so if you are leaning that way and you do like it, for our listeners out there who do like the Irish, what's your strike price for the Irish given this line movement and potential line movement moving forward?
I think once it gets to 14, grab the Irish.
Okay.
And then it's going to bounce back down. So be looking. It will get to 14 and then and bring it back down. But I'm happy with them at 13, 13.5. I liked them at 11.5. So I like the Irish, but I do think you can wait and probably snag a 14 if you're sharp enough.
Right. And if you're afraid of getting too cute, 13.5, I think it'll get there at least at some places. But you may miss the 14 because the sharps might pounce once it gets to 14. So next podcast, we are tentatively planning for next Thursday. Kai, is that where we're good at, the 27th?
Looking at Thursday,
okay.
Yeah.
So let's talk about bowl games between now and then. And let's start with, I know you like Army. Now, do you have any sort of rule of thumbs like some people do with armed service academies in the bowl games or anything like that? You hear these sort of narratives, these betting mantra with service academies. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
No, nothing specific. In fact, you almost have to treat each year separately. Last year, for example, I thought San Diego State was in a great spot against Army with Rocky Long, the option specialist, going up against Army. And I thought with the extra time to prepare that they would win that game easy. But when you look at Army in that game, they switched up their offense. I talked to Coach Long about that in the spring, and he said Army came out and did something they hadn't done all year and sort of took them a little bit by surprise, and that's why Army was able to play that one well. But in this one, I don't think you're going to see anything brand new on Army. I think you'll see them play their normal game, and I don't have any specific rules of thumb. I mean, sometimes when you're playing the option, it's a benefit to have extra time to prepare for it. That's one thing. But on the flip side of the coin, the armed services usually come into the bowl games pretty well prepared to play. You don't know about that about every other team.
So why Army in this particular matchup?
Well, I like Army over Houston for numerous reasons here. First of all, Houston is missing De'Ara King, which is big. I think that, you know, when you look at their backup QB, Clayton Tune, he's solid, but he's definitely not De'Ara King, their best offensive playmaker that they have. In fact, he was just so exciting to watch this year. So I think that's a massive part of the Houston offense, with him being out of the game. And then defensively, you know, not only is Ed Oliver out, but they're probably going to be missing two other defensive line starters. And this is an Army team that, of course, runs the ball well. They use their cut blocking at the line of scrimmage, which is always a defensive lineman's a bane. They really don't like going up against that. And I think when you look at Army, that their option will have success, will be able to control the ball, much like they did against Oklahoma. They kept Oklahoma's offense off the field. And as mentioned, this is not a 100% Houston offense without De'Ara King coming into this. And then you also have to factor in, the fact that Army's head coach now 2-0 in bowl games, does an extremely good job there. I think that when you look at the way that they run the football, they'll be able to keep Houston off the field and add it all up. I like Army to get this one by more than 4.5. And, oh, one other factor to throw in there, Army just played 2 weeks ago. A lot of times you see teams with a long layoff, you know, 4 weeks between their end of the regular season and the bowl, come out a little bit rusty. I remember a couple of years ago, teams that had the two-week advantage did phenomenally. So I think Army playing 2 weeks ago has them pretty much close to 100% right out of the gate.
What do you mean by that two-week advantage? Maybe teams that played in a conference championship game and then an early bowl game?
If you have 14 days less time for the bowl game, it's an advantage because you don't have as long a layoff. You know how sometimes in the NFL when teams are off a bye, they struggle in the first half? Well, if you're off a four-week bye, it takes you a little bit to get up to speed. Meanwhile, if you're off a two-week bye, you're in much better shape.
It's funny you mentioned that Oklahoma game with Army, and this total 60. Any inkling to lean under here?
Yeah, if you're going to pick Army, you're going to bet the under. If you're going to bet Houston, you're going to bet the over. It's that simple, because if this thing turns into a high-flying game, then Houston's got the advantage. And if it turns into a low-scoring struggle like I think it will, then you got to like Army. You know, the interesting thing about this game, Doug, is Army actually allowed on the season, they faced 600 plays. Houston faced 1,000 plays on the year. So when you look at the two teams, the yardage is a huge edge defensively to Army, but the yards per play is actually almost identical for this game. So that's the one interesting factor of it. But once again, Houston without three of their defensive linemen, without De'Ara King, you're not getting 100% Houston. I believe you are getting 100% Army.
You know, it's funny you're taking a favorite here. One of our loyal listeners tweeted in the question to the podcast, wondering if an underdog is going to ever cover a bowl game at this point. Favorite starting 6-0 against the spread is statistically significant for sure. In order to regress to the mean, dogs would need to cover 22 of the 35 remaining. So thanks to @BankrollBuckets for that question. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I think you will see the dogs come back to play. It used to be an automatic that non-New Year's Day dogs did well, but Vegas made a correction, and you know they made the line moves and slanted a little bit the other way. Now the favorites are covering. But now I think you'll see, if the favorites continue to cover, you'll see that you're getting a few extra points. Like here, the Army game was 3, 3.5. Now it's up to 4.5. So the favorite laying a little bit extra in this one.
And, of course, it always helps when the underdog has 4th and inches on the other team's 45 and punts, like Herm Edwards did in the Las Vegas Bowl. Jeez.
Yeah, it's a tough call there. And, you know, the interception return for a touchdown. Right. You're winning the game in the fourth quarter. You're up by three, getting 4.5 or five and a half. You had to feel pretty good at that point, and then somehow at the end of the game come up a little short on the scoreboard.
Yeah, I was disappointed there. I liked the Sun Devils in that spot as well. So you like Army minus 4.5. Speaking of unique offenses, you also like Georgia Tech. In this case, it's 5.5 against Minnesota.
Yeah, and this is one. Well, first of all, it's Paul Johnson's last game. So you got to think Georgia Tech's going to go all out for him, and I think they will. And when you look at Minnesota, they're a team that at times this year was dominated by squads. You know, at the end of the year, they got the win over Wisconsin just to make it to a bowl game, get to the six-win plateau. But Illinois ran the ball down their throat for 430 yards this year. Nebraska for 383. In fact, on the season, Doug, an interesting stat to me, Minnesota's defense away from home gave up 278 yards per game on the ground. And check this number out, 7.8 yards per carry. So when they're not in the friendly confines of home, they struggle against the run. And, Georgia Tech, you know, when they take on a team they can run the ball against, they do extremely well. You go back earlier this year, they played Clemson, a team that always shuts down the option. They got whooped. Then next week they played Bowling Green. Bowling Green never plays the option, 63-17. They play Louisville, a team that was in disarray, 66-31. They played Virginia Tech, an extremely young defense, 49 points. Here they're taking on a Minnesota defense that gives up 7.8 yards per carry on the ground away from home. That barely made it into the bowl. You're playing in Paul Johnson's last game. I think Georgia Tech is the better team, and if they can run the football, they're at their best. They'll be at their best here. And this is one where you talk about line moves. I think the line's only going to go up in this game. So, you know, right now, Georgia Tech laying about 5, 5.5 at different spots. I say get it now. Odds are by the time this one kicks off, Georgia Tech could very well be a 7-point favorite. I think there'll be Paul Johnson money coming in. I think folks will notice the rushing total. So grab that thing now at 5, 5.5 before it continues to rise up.
Yeah, it already has. It opened 4, right? So a lot of people grab the minus 4. Now, I have a question about line moves, and obviously I have some experience doing this as well. Just it's tough because you're ahead of the line move, so you have a quote-unquote good number. But what you do with that good number is gives you options. You have options, right? You can play it back from the beginning of the kickoff and have a straight middle. You can wait for live wagering and maybe play some of it back or play all of it back. That's the other thing. It's also portions. You know, it's not all or nothing. You can do half your bet at the start. You can also do alternate spreads, right, and create bigger middles or scalps or who knows. Like, for example, there's a bigger line move like West Virginia, Syracuse, right? You can do alternate spreads and have a scalp in a middle, which is a rare situation, but sometimes you're ahead of these huge line moves, especially when quarterbacks are ruled out, things along those lines. How would you advise people to approach situations where they have a really advantageous line?
Well, yeah, you definitely have to cross a major number to be thinking middle, because if the line goes from, let's say, 4 to 6, you'd be pretty dumb getting the middle. But if you got yourself in there at -6 and now it's 7.5, 8, a lot of games end up at that 7 total. A lot of games end up at the 3. So those are numbers where you think about the middle. Now, it depends how confident you were on the play at the beginning. I mean, if it was one of your best plays, I wouldn't go for the middle. If it was one of my top 3 to 5 plays, because I'd feel very confident. But once you cross a major number like that, it's always good to get yourself a little something, a little guarantee on it on the backside if it does.
That's a great point about liking that side. At some point, whether it be second half bets or whatever, you should treat it like a separate bet, right? Like, let's say we have Army and Houston under 60, and at halftime it's 10-7. The second half over-under is just a separate bet. I mean, you can try to get cute and hit a middle, but you're not really hedging the original game under bet. Like, that's a winner in theory, and you always have the live wagering to abort if need be as it climbs in the fourth quarter if the third quarter has a shootout. So at some point you need to say to yourself, this is a separate bet. Do I like the other side? Plus, you know, you don't treat it like a middle. You just treat it like a separate bet.
Yeah, that's a great point that you make there, because if you have a sure winner in your pocket, why give your money back?
Yeah, I mean, there's an emotion component to this. I get it, hedging, all that stuff. And But if you like your position, you're ahead of the line move, just be happy that you're ahead of the market. Doesn't mean it's guaranteed. But, you know, it's just something to keep in the back of your mind. All right, Phil, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to get more insight from you on the College Bowl card. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. What do you have on your holiday to-do list? How many errands do you have to run? As you know, the holidays are the busiest time of the year, especially at the post office. That's why we use Stamps.com. It saves us so much time during the hectic holiday season. Stamps.com brings all the services of the U.S. Post Office right to your desktop. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter, any package, any class of mail using your own computer and printer. Then the mail carrier picks it up. No trips to the post office required. It could not be easier. Print postage any day, anytime. Stamps.com is always open. Stamps.com not only saves you time, it saves you money. Stamps.com helps you print the right amount of postage every time. Never overpay again. And with Stamps.com, you get discounts on postage you can't even get at the post office. With all the time and money you'll save, Stamps.com is the best gift you can give yourself this holiday season. I use it. My family lives elsewhere in the country. I send packages for the holidays, obviously, but just mail in general. It is very valuable. And right now, you too can enjoy the Stamps.com service with a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus postage and a digital scale without long-term commitments. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in bets. That's Stamps.com. Enter bets. We go to TCU with a pick'em. You like the Horned Frogs. This is a team I don't think I've had picked right all year. I really don't. And they're facing a Cal team that obviously has a great defense. The over-under in this game is only 39.5.
Yeah, the over-under makes sense for the game at 39.5 because you have two very good defenses and two clearly below-average offenses. Now, TCU is down to their third-string quarterback, which is not a good thing, but I think it was 2 years ago. They went into the game with a third-string quarterback and ended up winning their bowl game. So it was a positive then. It was Brian Kohlhausen making his first start, and he had a pretty good game against Oregon, especially in the second half, and they came back and won the game. So Patterson's pretty good at developing backup quarterbacks, getting them ready for the game. And I think you'll see Michael Collins have himself a good game here at the QB spot. Now, as mentioned, neither offense is overly explosive, and both teams have great defenses. Cal gets a lot of tackles for loss. They've got the linebacking core. They only give up 3.5 yards per carry. But TCU's defense just as good. In fact, TCU's defense took on better offenses on the course of the year. So the fact that the numbers are close shows TCU rates the edge there. You look at them up front, I give TCU the edge on the defensive line. I like the fact that this is Patterson's 17th bowl game versus the first for Wilcox as the head man. TCU's played the tougher schedule. They took on 7 bowl teams this year, and Cal only took on 5 bowl teams, so an advantage there. I also give the advantage, like, at running back to TCU with Darius Anderson. I think he's a little bit more explosive than what Cal brings to the table at the running back position. I like the receiving core that TCU has. I give them the advantage there. And as mentioned, I think that Michael Collins will step in, do a good job at the quarterback spot for this one. So add it all up, I just think TCU's the better overall team taking on the tougher schedule. You got the game at Pick'em. And remember, TCU is 4-6. They had to win their last two games to get to a bowl. They beat Baylor on the road. They beat Oklahoma State at home. Now they need to get a win to avoid a losing season. So I think they've got a little bit more of an urgency to them than does a Cal team that very happy to get to a bowl game this year.
Interesting. I've never heard that angle, winning your last two, kind of a momentum, so to speak, if you will, and just because that is the key to these bowl games. Who's there? Like, who's there to play football versus who's just going through the motions? That's always the toughest part to handicap. And honestly, that's why I tread very lightly in bowl season. I just think there's a rhythm and a method to the madness during the regular season that I feel like I have a decent handle on. Whereas the bowl games, there are opportunities, don't get me wrong, but I just feel like I haven't personally got as good of a handle on that as I do the bowl season, as the regular season.
And a lot of things change. You know, you talk about an offensive coordinator that's got 4 weeks to prepare. So sometimes he's going to play out of his strengths and try to get a little too gimmicky. You never know if that's going to happen. You take a look at a team like UAB, for example. Last year they had a very good, very surprisingly good year. They got to the bowl game and got waxed by Ohio. I talked to Coach Clark after that game, or in the spring, about that game, and he said, you know what, I think we were just happy to be there. This year, I think they weren't happy to be there. They wanted to win the game, and you never know what you're going to get. Plus, the other thing, Doug, in the bowl season, you tend to bet almost all 40 games, don't you? You wouldn't think of that during the regular season. If you had a 40-game slate, you might come down to 5 or 10 games you're going to pick, but here there's a game every night, and you want to have something riding on it, right?
Well, in theory, we all do. Now, I abstained last night, didn't watch the game at all, but I mean, in theory, it's entertainment. Sometimes we need a little distraction from the relatives over the holidays, and
right.
You need that little skit in the game if it's on national television. I feel like, look, everyone has their strengths and weaknesses. I know a guy who rarely bets totals, and he's really good at sides. Like, it's just, he just can't figure it out. I joked earlier that I haven't figured out a TCU game all season. Right now, I'm reluctant to jump on board on any side involving TCU. Sometimes we just know what our lane is, and we got to stay our lane. For me, I'm not huge into bowl games. Like, there are a couple games I really, really like this bowl season, but as opposed to the Saturday picks, you know, I felt like I had a good season otherwise.
Yeah, and there's less outside distractions in the Saturday games, less suspensions, less line moves, all that stuff happening on Saturday. So clearly you've got much better line value on a Saturday during the college football season than you do during the bowls. I'm sort of like that in the NFL, Doug, with the New York Giants. If I pick on them, they're going to lose, and if I pick against them, they're going to win. So it just gets to the point where I'm not going to pick a New York Giants game the rest of my career.
Kai, how do you feel about that?
Tell me about it.
So those are your three official plays. Army minus 4.5, Georgia Tech minus 5, 5.5, TCU at a pick'em. A couple games I do want to get your opinion on. Boston College playing Boise State. Boise laying a short number at 2.5.
Yeah, and this is one where, you know, if you look at the numbers coming into the game, naturally Boise's got the advantage. But keep in mind, they have played a softer schedule than has Boston College, so the numbers figure to be inflated. And when you look at the two teams, the advantage I give to Boise would be at the quarterback spot. I think Brett Rypien, one of the more underrated QBs out there, you know, he's had his ups and downs, but he's had 30 touchdown passes, just 7 interceptions this year. I think that rates an edge over Anthony Brown. But running back-wise, as much as I like Alex Mattison for Boise, I really like A.J. Dillon for Boston College. And if he's 100% healthy, look out. He's one of the best running backs in the country. They also have one of the better offensive lines in the country. Give him a large edge there. Linebacking core, edge goes to BC. Secondary, how about this? Boston College's pass D in my rankings ranks number 12 in the country. Boise, number 100. Coaching edge, pretty close coming in. Special team, slight edge of Boston College. But BC's a Power 5 team that's an underdog to a Group of 5 team. And I think they'll be highly motivated here. Adazio just got himself his contract extension, so the team's behind him. I think Boston College is the better team, and they're the underdog.
I mentioned we're taping a podcast next Thursday. Now, that day, so that's the 27th, is a nice slate of bowl games. Let's talk about one of those, just in case. I don't know when we're taping and posting. Really intriguing, Miami and Wisconsin. Now, I think the Big Ten is sneaky awful this year. Now, I say sneaky awful, not saying it's awful, it's sneaky awful, because you had Ohio State, which was impressive, was in the discussion for the college football playoff, and then the Michigan's, you know, that defense and all the metrics there. But, you know, Penn State, Wisconsin, really down years. I mean, this Whiskey team lost at home to BYU. This is not the type of performance that we've seen in recent years, where I've poo-pooed them, but poo-pooed them as a national championship contender. They were at least going to the Big Ten title game, things like that. Penn State, after losing Barkley, obviously, understandably, a down year by their eyes. I just don't think the Big Ten's very good as I think about this conference as a whole.
You know, we had a somewhat discussion about that last week when I mentioned that the Pac-12, I think, will be underrated this year, and the fact that they had such a poor bowl season last year. Everybody's picking against them. The Big Ten had a tremendous bowl season last year. The only team that lost was Michigan. So I think everybody wants to get in on that Big Ten action.
And they almost came back and won that game, too.
Yeah, and that tends to make you a little overrated coming into the year. So I probably agree with you there. And that's the case in this game. You know, Miami only a 3.5-point favorite. I know Miami struggled at times this year, but most of their losses were pretty close. And a couple of those losses, they had significant yardage edges, but came up short on the scoreboard. So little undervalued. This team's got a legitimate defense. I mean, on the season, giving up 3.3 yards per carry. They've generated 37 sacks, 10 in the last two games this year. So a very solid defense, 268 yards per game. Now, the problem with Wisconsin, everybody wants to know, well, what's the problem with Wisconsin? Both these teams are in the top 10 at the start of the year. Well, why is Wisconsin not Wisconsin? Well, here's the two reasons that I'm putting it down to. First of all, in the bowl game last year, Alex Hornibrook had the game of his life. I mean, he shredded the Miami secondary, and that's why everybody thought he would be a tremendous QB this year. He struggled with injuries, got injured in the second half of the year, but still he's got his usual bugaboo, 13 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. That's not going to cut it. They can run the ball well, but Miami's got a great run defense and a great defensive line to battle that offensive line. So if you're going to put the onus on Hornibrook to win the game, you might get as many interceptions as you do touchdowns, and I think advantage Miami. The second is defensively. It's been like five straight years Wisconsin's had a top 10 defense. So many, including myself in the preseason, just assumed, hey, they don't have a lot coming back on defense, but this is Wisconsin. They're always a top 10 defense. Well, guess what? This year's defense is not a top 10 defense. They're giving up 4.4 yards per carry. They're giving up 359 yards per game. And in fact, last year they held their opponents to 127 yards per game below their season average. That's status quo for Wisconsin. That's what you expect. That's number four in the country. This year they're holding their opponents to 28 yards per game below their season average. That's number 46. So they don't have their normal top 10 defense. They don't have a pass game. They do have a strong run game. Great offensive line, Jonathan Taylor. But that's Miami's strength, is their run defense. And Miami's defense, by the way, holding opponents to 130 yards per game below their season average. So add it all up, playing with legitimate revenge. I mean, Wisconsin beat them in the bowl game last year. The cold weather's going to affect Wisconsin, but it's been pretty mild here, you know, not in the 20s or 10 or anything like that. So I got to think the weather in New York should be 40-ish maybe for this game, and if that's the case, shouldn't be too bad for Miami. Add it all up, I like the matchup. I think you got the more talented team. I like the Miami Hurricanes -3.5.
At the end, you nailed the two questions I was going to ask you. A, what role does revenge play here for these teams?
And I think it's going to be
favors Miami because they lost last year's bowl matchup.
Yeah, they lost the bowl matchup last year. Yeah, and it's I think it's big.
And then the weather, obviously, it's outdoors at Yankee Stadium. You have one team that typically plays in cold weather outdoors, and then you have a Miami team that we all know plays in warm weather.
And the good thing about the bowl is you get there 4 or 5 days
That's
early
true.
In advance of the game, so you sort of can get acclimated to the weather. I would do it as a football player. And I'll tell you, it was 2 years ago, Doug, or maybe the last time Miami played at Pitt. Going into it, it was supposed to be snow and cold, and Miami had a streak where there was like 12 straight games that they lost anytime the temperature dipped below 35 degrees. So I am all over Pitt in that game. I'm like, they will crush Miami. Miami won't want to be there. Miami comes out in short sleeves for the game, and they ended up winning the game. This was, I think it was 2015 the game was, actually. They went into Pitt and won 29-24. They opened up strong and won the game, and it was played in snow. So I think the players, given the extra time of the bowl to prepare for it, you're not flying in day of the game and getting shocked by the cold. I think that's going to help them out as well. And like I said, it's actually been pretty mild up here.
Right. No, it's. I was just looking at the weather the next couple of days out here, and you know, definitely tolerable. But who knows? I haven't looked. We're about a week away, so maybe if that's a big part of your handicap out there listening, wait until a couple of days before the bowl game, and you get a feel for the more, or at least more accuracy in theory for the weather forecast. Phil, excellent stuff as always. We appreciate the perspective. We'll connect next week. And the bowl season really ratchets up, but you have yourself a Merry Christmas.
Well, the same to you, Doug, and I guess I'll be talking to you after Christmas. Hopefully Santa's good to you this year.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been naughty, to be honest. So we'll see if Santa has been checking his list twice, like he says.
All right, sounds good. We'll talk to you next week, Doug.
All right, take care, bud. Thank you. Thanks to Phil Steele. And we're going to go the other side of the counter up next with John Murray of the Westgate Superbook. But first, a word from one of our sponsors.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
Kicking is for losers.
Mr. Director.
Good. How did they not fire Vance Joseph right on the spot, guys, on Saturday night? I would have just fired him right there and just picked somebody out of the stands and said, you're the coach now.
Well, that was mind-boggling. Truly,
you're in charge of the team now. I think you can do a better job than Vance Joseph. Go out. Go ahead. Go out there.
Just perplexing. Down four with 4 minutes to go or whatever.
Yeah, my biggest complaint is it was fourth and one. You know, if it was fourth and 20 after a holding call, then you kick the field goal. On fourth and one, you go for it. It's not even a question.
Well, on top of that, the epidemic is spreading to college, which typically is more aggressive. But Herm Edwards, fourth and inches on Fresno State's 45, punted.
I thought it was even closer than that. Was it the 45? Either way, it was really the moment that swung that game was that moment right there where Herm Edwards punted. Should have gone for it. Punted, lost the game, lost the cover. That was one of our biggest bowl decisions so far this season was that game, the Las Vegas Bowl. We really needed the dog there.
So the house needed the dog. Well, the house has needed the dog, I would assume, in a lot of bowl games, and the favorites are 6-0.
Actually, I think it was the New Orleans Bowl, the Appalachian State game. We needed the favorite big in that game, and they came through. We took some pretty substantial bets on the dog, Middle Tennessee State.
Yeah,
that
was a lot of sharps were on Middle Tennessee, and I was too on SportsCenter.
We had some big money come in on the dog there, and that was our biggest winner of the day Saturday, other than the Browns, my beloved Browns. easy win over the Denver Broncos. That was a good win for us at the book. We need one more win from the Browns, guys. If we can get the Browns up to 7 wins on their win total, it'll be very good for the Superbook.
Interesting. All right, so we'll talk more NFL on the other podcast. Let's talk college, and we're planning another podcast about a week from now. We had Phil Steele on earlier discussing some games between now and next Thursday and wanted to get your – just give us all the info from behind the counter because obviously there's significant line moves, so there are sharp bets coming in. We want to know.
There's a lot of sharp bets, and I think this is the best time of year to be in Vegas, DK. I love it this time of year where you got a bowl game almost every day. The weather out here is great right now. Is there anything better than the bowl season out here?
Well, I was talking with Phil. Like, I stink sometimes at picking all these bowl games. I'm on good spots. Like, I didn't get involved yesterday. Like, I'm good at I have a couple games you and I have talked about off air, and I think we got a square dog alert brewing as well. That
we do have one of those, heavy on.
But besides that, I got to push back a little bit. I don't know if this is the best time of year to be in Vegas.
Really? I think I just meant more from the perspective, like, I love college football. You know that I prefer college to pro football. Yeah. I think pro football is too dominated by the officiating these days. I prefer the college game, and I just really enjoy all these bowls. I know most of them are silly, but I like it. I think it's fun, and I really enjoy this time of year. And it's great. It's great having an island game essentially every day, because you know you're going to see big handle on all these games, no matter how bad the game is, no matter how stupid the bowl's name is. We're always getting good handle on these things.
And you raise a good point with the weather. The contrast with the weather elsewhere in the country, certainly a big feather in the cap of Las Vegas. Although I believe yesterday was the 10-year anniversary of the pseudo-blizzard throughout the Las Vegas Strip. I remember working and living out there.
Pseudo-blizzard is well put, but go ahead.
The Luxor was covered, had a caked-on snow everywhere. It was awesome, and it was just so funny how berserk Vegas went with the snowfall.
Yeah, people really lose their mind. What do you think that was? 2 or 3 inches of snow? I'm from the D.C. area. It's certainly not like what you guys have in Connecticut, but we get our share of snowfall there.
And it was more than 6 inches.
Yeah, it was more than 6 inches. Wow. Okay,
it was legit. Right, I encourage everyone to Google pictures.
That's respectable then.
2008 Las Vegas snow, like the Las Vegas sign had full footprints of snow around the sign. So really cool scene out there. And then obviously I was working for a news station out there with just, you know, our station motto is weather first. And so we were all over the weather because that was our calling card.
Yeah, nothing like that now. We got really nice weather here in Las Vegas, and we got some big bowl games coming up this week, and then certainly the big NFL card this weekend.
So let's talk about some sharp plays that you've received.
Sure. If you want to go in chronological order, the next one is actually the Potato Bowl. That game is Friday in Boise. I had a sharp group take Western Michigan plus 12.5 against BYU. That's really the only thing I've seen as far as sharp action here for this week, other than the under in the Bahamas Bowl. Now, that's a weather pick. That total was, I think, as high as like 68.5. It's all the way down to 59 now.
My
between
Lord.
Florida International and Toledo. I wouldn't go chasing under 59 just because sharper people were going under 68, though.
I mean, yeah, that's obviously two more possessions.
That ship has sailed. But also, Saturday, the Armed Forces Bowl. I found this one interesting. Had a group take Houston plus 5.5 in that game. That line's down to 4.5. And Houston's got a couple of their better players not playing in that game. That's why I found that action a little interesting. I know Ed Oliver, their star defensive tackle, is not playing. He's pointing towards the NFL draft. Yeah, so that, I thought that was interesting that the group would take the points there. But also Louisiana Tech plus 2. They play Hawaii in the Hawaii Bowl. That's the late game Saturday. That one always makes me nervous. It's just you don't know how focused the Louisiana Tech players are going to be when they travel to Hawaii for the Hawaii Bowl. I don't know if you could blame those kids if they're out there to have a little fun.
Hawaii kind of stinks.
Yeah, they're not great this year. They're not great. I'll give you a couple others. Georgia Tech minus 4 is what that group played. It's up to 5.5 now. That's the Quick Lane Bowl in Michigan. That's because Minnesota's got some guys sitting out for the draft, and a bunch of guys got suspended for that game.
Right.
I think the idea there is Georgia Tech wants to send Paul Johnson out with a win as his final game as the coach there.
I'm glad you mentioned that game, Murray, because we had Phil Steele on that one as well. I know some sharps on who got on Purdue minus 4, so I think it's...
Stop! Hammer time!
I think it's hammer time.
Georgia Tech minus 4.
Yeah, excuse me, Georgia Tech. I think it's hammer time on the rec.
I like it. I like that one. Further along, the Pinstripe Bowl had a group take 4.5 with the Wisconsin Badgers against Miami. That number's down to 3.5 here. Then we can go to, if you want to go to the big ones, we can go there. We saw some sharp money come in on Clemson, guys, and Clemson got as high as 13.5 briefly. We're back down to 13 here. We did have a guy come in, I believe it was on Monday, he bet $10,000 on Notre Dame Moneyline at 4-1. It's a guy I'm not familiar with. Not saying it was a sharp better. I've never seen this guy play before, but thought that bet was interesting. And I know the money is going to come in on both of those underdogs, Oklahoma and Notre Dame, in the two playoff games.
Oh, man. I was asking what he thinks will happen, the line move on the two national semifinal games. What do you think is going to happen?
I think the Notre Dame line will actually go down a little bit from 13. But it was sharp money that pushed it up. I should mention that. It was guys going from 11.5 up to 13. But I really believe that the public is going to come in heavily on the Irish, especially on the money line. I can tell you guys right now, I'm looking at it. Here's the money line breakdown for the two playoff games. We've got these are just straight bets, I should mention that. We've got 15 straight bets on Oklahoma, 1 on Alabama. We've got 24 straight bets on Notre Dame, 1 on Clemson. And those numbers are just going to grow as we get closer and closer to December 29.
What level of, I don't know if concern is the right word, but how do you guys think Tua will be after this ankle surgery?
From what I've read, it sounds like he's ahead of schedule. I expect Alabama to keep the ball on the ground. If they study the semifinal game last year, and I'm sure Saban will, Georgia ran for, 12, 15 yards a carry against Oklahoma. Once Georgia realized that all they had to do was run on every play, Oklahoma couldn't stop them for the rest of the game. I think Saban will keep that in mind. And obviously Tua can throw the ball if need be, but I think Alabama will be able to just gash away on the Sooners' defense by running the ball.
Huh. Yeah, that's – well, first of all, the ticket count's really funny, but
It's not surprising, though, and it's going to continue like that. people don't want to bet $600 to win $100, man. They want to bet $100 to win $425.
Right.
That's why there's always great value on the favorites in these big fights. We talk about it all the time, MMA, boxing. There's always really good value on the favorites because the public hammers the dog so much, drives the prices down as the books try to get off some of their risk. And that's what I expect to see happen in both the Orange and Cotton Bowls.
Yeah, my favorite play at the beginning of the bowl season was the team total for Bama over. But now I'm wondering how high scoring that game would be.
80.5 is pretty high. I thought the total was going to be more like mid-70s, to tell you the truth. And then it came 79.5 here. We opened it. Or 78.5, one of those two numbers. And it's all the way up to 80.5. Certainly the public is going to be all over the over, as you can imagine.
I mean, is Bama going to put up a 50-burger? That's what basically you need for the team total.
I mean, they're fully capable of it. And we've seen Oklahoma's given up 40, 50 points to offenses nowhere near as potent as Alabama's.
Right.
So there's no reason that they can't do it. I mean, it's you never want to say, oh, yeah, they're going to score 50 points like it's an easy thing to do, but Alabama certainly got the horses to do it.
Huh. All right, Bud, any other plays for now?
Yeah, I think the really interesting one has been the Virginia Tech-Cincinnati game. That's the Military Bowl. That's on New Year's Eve in Annapolis, Maryland. A lot of sharp groups are taking the points there, taking Virginia Tech. But we did have one group laid 5, which pushed the number back up to 6. And then we had a group come in last night. They took Virginia Tech plus 6. We're down to 5.5 there. But it's been some good two-way in that game. That same group that took Virginia Tech last night also took Washington plus 7. That's the Rose Bowl against Ohio State. I like that play myself. I think Washington's got a coaching edge there with Chris Peterson. And I've said this before, but I don't see Ohio State being really motivated to send Urban Meyer out like a win one for the Gipper type situation. Like, is Urban Meyer really that beloved of a coach?
Well, yeah, I mean, by his players, maybe not nationally, yeah. By his own players. I mean, they went there, chose him.
Okay, I think of him as, I won't say it, but I don't think of him as a beloved figure in college football, but you're probably right. Maybe
I mean, his players do. Like, I think his players like playing for him, and I just don't know if Ohio State has the defense.
Yeah, I like that Washington pick. I thought that made sense. I like this one too. Pittsburgh plus 6.5 in the Sun Bowl against Stanford. Bryce Love not playing for Stanford. Bryce Love should have gone pro after last year, fellas. He made a big mistake coming back to school. You know, if you're going to be a first round pick, you got to go. You got to go.
I don't know, man. Pitt's pretty bad.
They're not great, but that spot makes sense to me. I think that's it for all the really good ones. Do you want to touch on the square dog that we see looming out there, or do you want to say that?
Do we have a siren here?
Yeah, we could save it. It's not as one-sided as I thought it was going to be.
Hold on.
But
there we go. That's what I got.
It's not quite as one-sided as I thought it was going to be. But there's certainly a lot of money on the dog in this game. It's Central Florida. They're playing LSU in the Fiesta Bowl. LSU was going to be without their best corner, Greedy Williams. He's pointing towards the NFL draft. But obviously Central Florida without quarterback Mackenzie Milton. And I don't think LSU is going to take them lightly. I'm not necessarily saying Auburn did take them lightly last season, but I know LSU will not be taking them lightly this season.
Yeah, and I think it's good that you brought it up because that's right on a key number of 7. And if you think it's going to go higher, I would definitely hammer the Tigers now.
And then, you know what, a group came in, I think it was last week, and they laid the points with Georgia, pushed Georgia up to 13 in the Sugar Bowl against Texas. I thought that was interesting because I kind of like Texas. I thought that number was a little high when it first came out, 13.5-ish, 13. Just because I question Georgia's motivation in that game. I think they're going to be disappointed to not be in the college football playoff. But this group that I respect laid the points there and drove that number up.
I like Georgia, too. I think this whole Oklahoma defense got better at the end of the year because they stopped Texas is, like, kind of laughable. I mean, quarterbacks hurt, and, like, did Texas stop themselves? You know, like, great, they didn't give up a million points. Okay, that's a fact. But I don't know. I just don't think Texas is that great. compared
to
Georgia.
Let me give you one more that I like. This play, I saw some sharp action on it. I like it myself. Iowa State getting 4 points in the Alamo Bowl against Washington State. That number's down to 3.5. That game is December 28th in San Antonio.
That'll be a fun game.
Yeah, that should be a fun game. And then certainly you guys are well aware of this by now, but Syracuse was a team a lot of sharp money came in on. I know we talked about it, DK. Will Greer not playing for the Mountaineers in the Camping World Bowl. A lot of people have asked me how I feel about it as a West Virginia grad. I feel good for Will Greer. Will Greer should be pointing towards the NFL, and he shouldn't worry about the Camping World Bowl the same way that Ed Oliver shouldn't worry about his bowl and Rashawn Gary shouldn't worry about his bowl. These guys that are going to be high draft choices, they're doing the right thing, in my opinion, by not playing in these meaningless games. Let's call them what they are.
Yeah, they're exhibitions. And so right. that line was 7. It's now West Virginia 1.5. So significant
line
move.
I mean, how can you blame a kid who's 21 and is 4 or 5 months away from making millions of dollars for wanting to preserve his health, for doing everything he can to preserve his health? I'm not going to be the person that questions kids for doing that.
No, the game doesn't mean anything. It really does not mean anything, and that's why it's so hard to handicap as well. There's just so many moving parts. And you touched on it with the Hawaii Bowl, right? You don't know which players are going to eager to be there. And Minnesota has 6 players suspended, and it's just mayhem in a lot of ways. So, all right, man. Good stuff. Look forward to the NFL pod. We can really get into the bonanza. But good time of year for all, especially when it's not snowing in Las Vegas.
I'll be on the East Coast in a few days, gentlemen. I am flying home for Christmas, but I'll be there Monday and Tuesday of next week visiting the family in Great Falls, Virginia. So I'll be on the East Coast with you guys.
Hanging out with the Prince of Props?
I don't know if I'm going to have time to see the Prince. I don't know. The Prince, I'm starting to think he's out to sabotage me.
Oh, is that right?
But we can get into that on the NFL podcast. I'm wondering about him right now.
All right, my man. We'll talk to you on the other side.
All right, fellas. Kicking is for losers.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the podcast. We'll have another one tomorrow for the NFL. Mr. Murray, Mr. Director, will be back for the breakdown. We'll recap a wild bonanza weekend. When I say wild, a losing bonanza weekend. I got a little greedy there. So thanks to Phil Steele. Thanks to John. And tomorrow we'll have John back with Mike Clay as we take a look at Week 16. A lot of uncertain lines with Aaron Rodgers, Cam Newton, and some other moving parts with this late juncture of the season. And we'll also do the baby bankroll bonanza entering in to the holidays. Remember, Phil's and John will be back after Christmas for the rest of the slate of bowls. And don't forget, Stanford Steve and Chris Felica have their own podcast under their own umbrella, Stanford Steve and the Bear. And just that NBA pick again with Spurs -1, but now it's 3.5. So do with it what you may. Is that the right phrase? Confessions of a non-speaker for myself?
I guess it was close enough going into the holiday.
All right, yeah. I'm limping to the finish line here. All right, Kai, thank you as well for all your efforts. Safe travels.
Thank you.
And thanks to everyone listening, and hopefully we provided some enjoyment while you travel for the holidays. Good luck out there.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.